Scott Wells, MagicNewsWire.com, and we are now in Elmhurst, Illinois, and heading over for a magic show featuring Steve Chezaday. And I think he's going to have a couple other people who will be involved with the show here later today then as well. It's a place called Wine and Vine, so I'm not sure how large of a place that it's going to be, but apparently I think Eugene Berger was performing here just recently. So anyhow, it looks like so I can see through the windows, got a few people seated for the show. It's supposed to start at 1 o'clock, and looks like it's about 12:59, so we're running very close on time over here to see the show, Don Weinberg and myself. So we will go inside, watch a show, and give you a little review after we get over here. So it as you walk in, looks like things are getting set up over here. Yep, got Steve Chesley on. Hi, Steve. Scott Wells, good to see you again. How are you?
Good to see you.
I was just talking, I was going to be, this is for the MagicNewsWire.com, so I'm doing a podcast, so I thought I'd come by and say hello. Want to say hello?
You got it. Hey, thanks for coming out.
Tell me about the show, just before we begin here. You got like a few minutes.
It's Paul with Paul Lee, show with Paul Lee and myself. We're going to be taking turns and doing some magic for the fans out here.
Cool. So is it going to be like a stage show, close up?
Oh, yeah. No, we're doing a stage show.
Awesome.
Yeah. No,
okay.
No illusions. There's not enough room in here for tonight, but that is awesome. I listen to you guys all the time. I really do. I'm like, that is too funny.
Well, good. So. Yeah, I'm getting kind of a little bit of magic from all around. You know, Don Weinberg and I just were up in Bay City and saw the Vaudeville show, you know, Michael Finney and Gene Anderson. So we kind of been making a loop and seeing a bunch of magic and said, Steve's going to be working. I said, I got to go and see him.
There you go. Well, thanks for coming out. It'll be a fun time.
We'll talk with you after the show.
You got it.
Break a thread. All righty. Well, we'll catch up with him right after the show. All right. Well, the show is over, and I'm here back again then with Steve Chezaday and with Carol. Glad to have you guys here.
Hey, what's
again.
Up?
Hey.
Yeah.
And
thanks for coming.
I also want to say how much I enjoyed the show. Like, you know, it's a small kind of, it's not even a theater. It's a restaurant, you know.
That's right.
So
it's
kind of an unusual venue for you. Me not doing any big illusions like you normally
do. That's right. Yeah. Now, this is our small show that we do for many events, that type of thing. We're doing an interview right now.
Now, how many people do you normally have, like, whenever you're performing your big illusions and everything?
Oh, well, we usually have 3 to 4 people if we're doing a big show.
Yep.
But otherwise, when it's just in and around town, it's just us. You know, we got to keep it simple. Fast in. We're already packed. I don't know if you noticed.
I was watching it. Yeah, that was smart. You were kind of on first before Paul was. So afterwards, you were already ready to go.
You have to do it. I mean, from here, I go all the way, I think, to Joliet. But I got to stop back
home,
too. Now,
people in Germany don't know where that is. Where's Joliet?
It's actually by you. I'm going out by you another restaurant gig out that way. So
that's like what? Like 30 miles from here or something? Or
I don't know.
Juliet, I think, is like probably 45 minutes from here.
Yeah, it's. I got to stop at home anyway.
Yeah.
So I go.
Yeah.
But okay. Still.
So what is your long-term plan? Where are you going to be going? What's? I mean, you got a lot.
Long-term.
The holidays. Yeah. So
well, I'm sticking around town.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of company shows and private parties during the Christmas season. And then I'm looking forward to Magi Fest in January in Columbus.
It's one of the best. Or just gonna
No. We're just attending.
It's a fun time, yeah.
It is awesome. Last time they had a blizzard out there, and we were stuck.
They typically do.
Yeah. But so in the dead of winter, we travel, 6 hours or so. But it's a fun time. I have a lot of friends in Ohio, and I look forward to seeing them out there.
That's one of my favorites.
You like that one?
Yeah.
Have you been to the Winter Carnival?
No, not.
That's a good one to go to.
Not yet, yeah.
Down
but
in
that's awesome.
Forge would be kind of fun.
Yeah, my friend Terry Evanswood is down there, so
maybe
we'll make it work this year. Yeah.
Should be some fun.
Yeah.
Banachek and myself and Johnny Thompson, some others are going to be performing.
Cool.
So it should be
awesome.
A very good convention as well. Well, I'm glad that you had put this on. It's kind of, again, a small venue compared to what you normally would have. It's almost like an expanded birthday party type of a show, that everybody did.
Yeah, with mine.
It's a lot of fun. And kids are really great and into this. Good reactions.
Yeah, no, I work with the kids all the time. I'm a family magician. We still do the rock and roll show when we can do that. But otherwise, in the real world, you got to do what you got to do.
Yep.
And
good advice.
Give me a call. I'll come to your house. I'll be there. So yeah, check out my website, Chezaday.com.
Chezaday.
Correct. You got it. And you can write me. You can call me. Whatever. I'm around.
You'll be around.
You
great.
Take care.
Thanks very much, Steve. Carol, pleasure very much. Good luck.
Thank you.
And I'm
going
to go talk to Paul over here for just a minute. Okay, so now I'm here with Paul Lee, and just wanted to chat and say enjoy the show. Kind of a little bit of everything. Goodness, you know, when I come to restaurants, I don't expect to see doves and rabbits and ducks and dogs and livestock.
Good, good. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming out. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Very good. Now, you work in Chicago mainly, or do you work around there mainly?
I will travel into, I've done shows in Indiana, I've done shows in Wisconsin, and I've been flown out to do strolling close-up in Vegas and Nashville on several different occasions.
Yep. Now, are you especially this kind of show where you're going to be doing, you know, very interaction kind of things with kids and doves, and you have a dove routine, I mean, a longer dove routine?
No, I don't work on any, you know, no Dan Spiri style dove act, but I do all corporate if they want, you know what I mean, and then I can do all kids show as well.
Sure.
So, you know, pretty versatile as far as, you know, the show style.
Now, you've been doing this for a number of years, and you had said during the show that you've been on Bozo how many times?
10 times, counting reruns.
On the Bozo show?
Yeah, I traveled with the Franzen Brothers Circus as ringmaster magician for 4 years.
Oh.
Actually, I was just in Minneapolis last Thursday. They interviewed me for Animal Planet about the animal trainer who actually was killed in the ring in Carrolltown, Pennsylvania by one of his cats.
And we've been talking to you about replacing that person?
No, about just the story on his life and that I knew him. So that should be coming out on Animal Planet sometime. Check my website for details.
Which is what?
PaulLeeMagic.com.
Easy enough to remember. Now, you were the ringmaster, you said, then?
Yes.
For Friends, but for how many years?
4 years.
4 years, okay.
Have
you seen the Zing Zag Zoom?
Yes, last year we saw it. Yes, yeah. I didn't catch it this year.
Mm-hmm. Very good show. You started to say what? How many shows you were doing?
With the circus, we were in 30 states. We did 2 shows a day, 7 days a week for 10 and a half to 11 months. And 90% of the shows were in a different town every day.
Now, did you do some magic? I mean, like Alex does with Zing Zang Zoom?
Yes, I did. I did a sword suspension. I did a broom suspension. I did metamorphosis. I did a stack of boxes. I did a crystal box. I mean, not all, you know, that same season, but we'd switch it up. I did produce a dove. I did do the duck to the dog. Trying to think of what other illusions. I think we did a zigzag as well.
Right.
And working mud shows and illusions was, I mean, I'd rather be where he is right now doing it on solid ground,
right.
You know. But we worked mud shows. I did have a portable stage that the working guys would bring out and open up. So it was an 8-foot round frame. So whatever was done had to be done in that 8-foot round.
I mean, you're saying mud shows for those people who don't know. Of course, that's just going to be working just on the dirt. I mean, that's a real tent show that you're actually
after. Absolutely. Yeah. It was 130-foot round tent with square tent with round corners.
Yeah.
And you would work parking lots. If it rained, where the, you know, you heard that phrase, the show must go on.
Yeah.
That originated in the circus, from what I heard. Don't quote me on that, but I thought that's where it came from. Because whether it was hot, cold, raining, or mud, we did. And I have pictures of me working almost ankle deep in mud with the mud all the way to my knees by the time you get into the ring. Yes.
Yeah, amazing. Well, a good, productive, and long life. It sounds like it. You had a lot of background.
I worked Wisconsin Dells for 4 years. I did worked Riverview Park and Water World in Wisconsin Dells for 4 summer seasons, Memorial Day to Labor Day, 3 shows a day, 7 days a week.
Yep.
So,
wow. And you're going to be doing what then? What's your plan from here? Do you mean to get some?
Just continue to keep working. I mean, I'm lucky enough that I'm still getting jobs. You know, the holiday season's coming up. It should be a pretty busy time for me.
What's your secret? I mean, you kind of go back to some of the same clients all the time?
This year, right now, I have 87 repeat clients.
Wow.
In the business, you know that business, and anybody listening to this podcast will know, that's a really good number when you're working single dates.
Sure.
When you have 87 of your clients.
Have you come back
in 1 year? This year alone, I moved up to 87, which means last year I think I was in the 60s, you know, 60 of my customers or clients were repeats.
Right.
And in this day and age, in this time, I mean, and when you work single dates, 87 is a huge number. I mean, I had somebody call me, actually, I did his 6th birthday, and he's a father now with a 6-year-old child, and I did a family party for them.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, so it goes on. Well, great. That sounds fantastic. Paul, thank you very much. I appreciate your time over here, then, for being on the MagicNewsWire.com.
Great speaking with you. Nice meeting you.
Good
thank
luck
you very much.
Thank you, Paul. And we're going to be going over and visiting the museum, which is just right behind us. It's probably within about 100 yards of us, where they have a magic exhibit. We're going to go see that, and I'll talk to you guys over there. Scotty out. So this is Scott Wells with Magic News Wire, and we're over here then at just magicnewswire.com, of course, and we are in the Elmhurst, what's it called? The Elmhurst Historical Museum. I'm here with Rosemary and Richard, and they are weekend docents, I guess, kind of working here. So tell me something about the magic exhibit, and how long has this been running?
I think it began the end of June, and we had it extended into January.
Yes. And tell me about some of the artifacts,
the
whatever.
Public demand.
I really haven't gone into it yet, but tell me something about it.
Well,
a
lot of the different magicians in the area have lent us a lot of their artifacts and everything. We have things from Wizzo from Bozo Circus.
Right.
So he has been here several times giving different performances and talking to us on Thursday. They have special talks for people on Thursday.
And you say on performances, so they have like a stage set up or something over here?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Why don't we go in? You've got to show me a few things as well.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about all of this. As we go in, so lots of posters and things.
Posters, and it kind of goes through the history, going back in the past, you know, to the different magicians.
Right. It's like a vanishing birdcage advertising, promotional material. So these things are mainly just donated local magicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and several of the magicians have visited. We had, during our opening, we had
Dia Blue.
Yes, he was here with his daughter. Very interesting.
Gosh, she's been around for a long time then also. I see you have a lot of videotapes.
Videotapes.
So this really is kind of related specifically to Chicago, because I see here's Johnny Thompson, who used to be in Chicago. Now they have other magic legends playing. Looks like it says Johnny Thompson, Johnny Paul, Bill Malone, and then an egg bag by Martin Lewis. Looks like you have a...
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Cy Berman, and I've been doing magic for over 40, and I'd like to show you...
There you hear Johnny doing his Di Vernon impression.
Different impressions.
Very, very slowly. And then, he's doing his cups and balls and everything. And then we have a video from Shulian's, which was Magic's hangout, big bar that was popular several years ago, decades ago, I guess I should say.
And now it is still. They still are doing some magic. It's O'Donovan's.
O'Donovan's. Oh, they're still performing over there.
Well,
then.
Yeah. Okay. There was a group of magicians here last weekend. They were going to meet over there too after they visited.
Interesting. And that's located where? In which burg is it?
It's in the same area. Do they say where it is? It's the northwest side of Chicago.
Matt Shulian's on the okay. And. There's some videos of that, and then we got some videos from Don Allen's Magic Ranch, of course, and there you got Jay Marshall doing his lefty routine, as I'm watching the video over here. So just got some old, that's kind of neat, with the old video. So they kind of got a little kiosk set up that looks like the Magic Ranch with the horse blanket and steer horns and everything. Very interesting. So
we also have activities for children when they come in. We give them a magic spyglass, and they look at, find a magic number, and then there's some words, and they fill out this little form that corresponds to the number.
Okay.
And after they finish, they read it to me, and it's a little, it's a message from Harlan Tarbell.
Oh, okay.
Who, you know, lived in Elmhurst.
And lived here in Elmhurst.
And is buried in St. Mary Cemetery by Elmhurst College. So it's a message to the kids to say, don't divulge any of the information you have learned here.
The secrets you've learned.
The secrets. Don't divulge any.
I see also there's...
It's a nice little activity for the kids. They like to do that.
There's an original illusion. That's Jack Gwynn's dollhouse. That's pretty cool. Let's see what else we got. Yeah, speaking of Harlan Tarbell, there's a video of Eyeless Vision, it says.
And it's actually from an episode in 1950 from You Asked for It. And if you listen to it, they have Harlan Tarbell performing an act. And it says at the end, if you want to learn any more information about Harlan, call him at Elmhurst, Illinois. So, and this goes back to the 1950s, so you can see this coming up soon.
Interesting. And then over here next we have, looks like some of the other authors. What is this? Erdenace Fitzkey. And here is Jay Marshall's plaid jacket, linking rings, and a lefty glove, which is the original puppet. says that was owned by Jay and used by Jay Marshall over here. Well, I wonder how many gloves he actually had.
About his wife.
Oh, yeah, there's Francis also with the card duck. Yep, the original card duck that she had used. Interesting. And from Wizzo, we got his original outfit. Looks like Moshe Bodine, yep.
And we have an episode here on the video. From the Mike
Oza.
Douglas show.
Oh, from Mike Douglas.
1964, and he's doing
a broom suspension with Bill Cosby. I've heard so many stories about this one. Yeah,
this is really funny.
He said Bill was such a great guy to work with.
Yeah, look at that.
Mm-hmm. There he is, Bill Cosby floating on a broom. And the crowd goes wild.
Now listen to this here.
This is the first view that there are no wires connected to the
job. As he's passing the hoop over Bill Cosby.
Behind the laws of the ladies and gentlemen, he could remain there for hours.
Yeah, Bill Cosby says, not really. He wakes up.
Stay asleep.
So Marshall says, yeah, stay asleep. And also in the exhibit, then they've got several of his magic kits, of course, that had made him so famous, his TV magic cards and all of that from Marshall Bodine. And different fraternities, they've got some things over here from the SAM, Assembly Number 3. And the IBM and the Magic Masters Wizard Club, Knights of Slights, Mazda Magic Ring. Goodness, yeah, I had them all mentioned as well as the Chicago Roundtable. It says in 1929, a group of five Chicago magicians led by Dorney Dornfield, started meeting daily at 2 o'clock, except Sundays, at De Lazan's restaurant to talk shop. Other people started socializing around there, Matt Shulian, Harry Blackstone, Howard Thurston, Cardini, Ed Marlowe, and Jay Marshall. So it must have been a really fun time. Well, lots of really cool stuff on. Here's a video with Eugene Berger.
Eugene.
Now, you said Eugene was performing recently here?
Well, he was here. He's been here to see the exhibit. Too.
Okay. And Jim Steinmeier, of course, who is a designer of So Many Illusions, just recently finished a book, another book, it seems. Lots of really cool stuff. Well, you know, Chicago certainly is a mecca for magicians throughout here. Now, what else have we got over here, Rosemary?
We do have what's going on in Chicago recently, the different magic shows.
Oh, okay, brings you up then to current. What's happening?
Any magic in Chicago today.
Oh, Supernatural Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Neil Tobin is featured. He's Supernatural Chicago. He's been here several times, too, performing.
And also there's Magic Chicago and the Magic Cabaret, which are currently running in downtown Chicago. So if you guys are going to be coming up to Chicago, there is a lot to see, not just in this museum, but then also just downtown and seeing some of the shows and everything then, too. I don't know if Chris Carter is working. Maybe not, but you might be lucky to catch him. Sometimes he performs and has some stage shows up here then as well. So I have to check online to find out what's happening around Chicago. Now, as you kind of exit over here, what's just more? Oh, I see. Just kind of more posters, kind of leading your way out. Well, Rosemary, thank you very much. It's been a nice exhibit.
Too, on the second floor.
Oh, there's more up there.
An exhibit on the history of Elmhurst, and also a new exhibit showing the 100 years of Elmhurst becoming a city government.
City government. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. I'm going to spend a little bit of time kind of going back through this and looking through it myself. It's very fascinating. Thanks very much. Hope you guys have enjoyed this too. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells on MagicNewsWire.com, and I'm at one of my favorite magic shops, Midwest Magic, and it's just not Tinley Park. What's the name of this?
Franklin Park.
We're Franklin Park, and I'm here with one of my favorite friends, Tim Felix. Tim, how are you doing?
So far, so good, but it's still early.
And I've always, seems like when I come to Chicago, it's on the during a weekend or something, and I stop in, but I've never made it on Hot Dog Saturday, so this is like once a month.
You made it on Hot Dog Day today.
And almost missed it here. It's like 4 o'clock, and so it's
kind of slung in under the wire.
Yeah, I just got a couple more dogs left. Now, how long have you been in business here?
At this location, I think 8 years.
8 years? Okay. And this is expanded from the size you had earlier?
Oh, God, yes. We get over 10,000 SKUs in this store.
Holy cow. So if you're needing anything, they got it here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I always think it was kind of cool. You've got a nice little place for lecturers on the other side. You've got a little stage and everything, so you have people come in all the time.
Theater area, yeah. Mm-hmm. Works out fairly well. Next lecture we got set up, Curtis Kamm is coming in.
Curtis, now when's his lecture coming?
I believe it's December 2nd.
Well, hopefully this podcast will be up before December 2nd, so come on up to Midwest Magic to hear Curtis.
Absolutely.
And so how many people do you normally have at the lectures?
Well,
I know what average is. I mean,
well, I used to get asked by prospective lecturers. So how many people do you draw for a lecture? And I always figured that's not quite the way to look at it. It's not how many people I draw. It's
you.
How many people you draw.
That's right.
Now, you know, Max Maven drew 55 people last time he was here.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people Curtis will draw, but Curtis is very good. And
well, Jonathan Pendragon was just here. How many Jonathan?
Jonathan wasn't here. He was one of, one of the clubs. One of the clubs.
Yep.
But, you know, we've had, depending on who, Banachek was here. We had a full house for him. He did a great job. But the same month, we had Banachek. We had Wayne Houchin. We had John Stetson. We had Doc Hilford. It was a busy month.
Busy month, yeah. Now, you got just, you said, like 10,000 different products, you know, over here. So,
and the best part about that is, unlike many of my competitors, everything that's on the website we actually have in stock.
That you can ship out within 24 hours.
Oh, it goes out as soon as possible. Yeah, but it's all here. It's we don't list things we don't actually carry.
Right, and your website is
www.midwestmagic.net.
And so they .net, not .com.
.net.
Okay, remember that, folks. And everything that you see is in stock that they will have out.
That's the idea. There's occasionally the small glitch in the system when you've got that much stuff. But in general, yeah.
Now, you attend a lot of conventions, but you don't really show as a dealer at conventions.
No, I'm off at conventions
very often,
seeing friends.
That's right. I was going to say, you go just for the fun of it.
I can't be locked up behind a table. There's no way.
I was going to say, I didn't think that I'd seen you actually as a dealer, but I always see you, you know, there as just another registrant.
Yeah,
you know, the convention. So who handles the shop while you're out of town?
The guys are here. Kind of depends on what day it is who's here, but there's always people here.
Yeah. Now, you said the next guy that you got coming up is going to be Curtis Kamm on the 2nd. And do you find that there is a certain time of the year that people buy more Magic? Is it around Christmas? Is it Halloween? Or
historically, now I worked at Magic Inc. for 13 years when I was a kid. Historically, people would always think, wow, Christmas rush. No. You do get a certain degree of, you know, grandma coming in to buy a Magic set for a kid.
Right.
But what we actually used to get was an after Christmas rush, because every kid had a pocket full of money from Christmas and had to go out and spend it.
Right.
Now, we are not as geared towards selling to kids here as some shops are.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't have a particularly busy season.
It's just kind of steady throughout the year.
Exactly.
Okay, when you couple that, I guess, with the internet sales and everything else.
So that's what tries to keep us afloat these days and with this economy.
Yep. It's got to be tough, I think, all over. But this is really a brick-and-mortar shop, I think, which is great, then, too.
It's a brick-and-mortar shop.
Fewer and fewer of those.
They are basically dinosaurs in there.
Now, you've been a longtime friend with Jim Steinmeier. Have you, his new book, I guess you've got a copy of the new book.
Technique and Understanding or Impossibilities?
I got Impossibilities. I got that.
That's great. Technique and Understanding is his big new one.
It was new one, I thought, with Thurston, I thought.
And the Thurston one will be out in, I believe, 2011.
Oh, okay. I thought it was already released.
It's done.
Not yet. Okay.
But I don't think it's out yet.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, soda's going along with the hot dog. Thank you very much.
How are you doing? How are you?
So you have people kind of coming and going all the time. It's just a great hangout for magicians over here, then, too.
Well, this is what I grew up with. Part of the fun part of the shop was that it was a place to hang out. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Remember my dad?
New people coming in then all the time. So anyhow, just wanted to give you guys a little bit more of the flavor. We've been going around Chicago and different places, seeing Magic with Donna Joyce. You know, we went up to Bay City and saw the vaudeville show with Michael Finney and everybody. And so I would stop by and say hello then also.
Enjoy yourself and have a couple of hot dogs.
I think I will. Thank you very much. That's Tim Felix. This is Scotty out at Midwest Magic.
Well,
It's Sunday morning here in downtown Chicago. We're at the Flat Top Grill and here for brunch on my birthday. Happy birthday to me. And it's a lot of fun. This is a kind of a Mongolian grill type of a place where you can go through and just kind of add your own ingredients and everything. So I just finished a humongous omelet, you know, with everything in there. But the pancakes are phenomenal also. You can have anything you want in the pancakes. Just kind of load it up, put them in a bowl, and then they mix it with the pancake mix. You know, of course, I had some toffee pieces and some chocolate chips and shredded almonds. Oh, man, was that good. And it looks like Don Weiberg is going to be having some French toast with some gummy bears, which sounds kind of interesting also. Anyhow, enjoying the day. We're going to be, I believe, heading over to Magic Inc. here sometime shortly. So I'll be giving you a little broadcast once I get over there. So, Scotty out. All right, just because it's close, I think that I probably need to mention this. It's called Uncle Fun's, and this is one of these places that's got things from dating way back, 60s and 70s, 80s, stuff that you can't find anyplace else, but they've got it here with all kinds of fun type of things, characters, small, like toy soldiers or nuns and skeletons and just drawers of stuff, you know, with plastic spiders and all that kind of stuff, books and things. It's kind of like a Spencer's Gifts, I guess. Those of you might be familiar with what Spencer's is, but kind of on steroids. It's just a lot of weird and unusual stuff. And so this is located also near downtown Chicago. And let me get the address for this. All righty, it's located at 1338 West Belmont in Chicago. So there you go. As I said, lots of weird stuff and unusual things. If you can't find it, then maybe go to UncleFunChicago.com. Maybe you can see what I'm talking about. Lots of weird stuff. At least it's worth mentioning. Part of the Magic Tour here in Chicago. Scotty out. Scott Wells with MagicNewsWire.com, and I'm here at Magic Inc. with Sandy Marshall. Hello, Sandy.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And so tell me, we're in here, and I know, when did you release the book? It was like in 09?
No, it was last year.
It was just it was like around December?
Yeah, well, it wasn't 09. It was back last year.
Earlier.
In, you know, 09. no, technically it came out this year, but we had a few advanced copies we released in December for the Christmas rush, but the official release date, I think, was the 7th of January, 2010.
And just so that you guys out in podcast land know what we're talking about, the title of the book is?
Beating a Dead Horse, The Life and Times of Jay Marshall.
And, of course, this Andy Marshall is Jay's son, and we're talking to, for those of you in Germany or someplace who may not know who Sandy is, you need to come and listen to him.
Or in Blackpool, England, who
or in Blackpool.
Don't know.
not a lot of people turned out for that, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, that's the way it goes. In any event, the book is doing remarkably well, and we're having great success. It's literally taking my wife and I around the world this year.
It's fantastic.
We've been to England twice. We've been to France. We've been to Greece. We've been to Athens and Ephesus. We were in Turkey for a thing. We were in Rome and Salerno and Sicily, all over America. It's been
how many
been
copies
remarkable.
Have you sold this past year?
I think we easily 20 or 30.
Dozens have been sold.
Yeah. it's gone very well. I mean, yeah. Thousands of copies. And we had some recent news that was pretty good. We've been nominated for the Benjamin Franklin Award in three different categories: biography, first book, and interior design nonfiction. But that isn't really the good news. We're nominated for a Pulitzer, and it's the first magic book in the history of the world.
That's amazing. Congratulations on that.
We'll know about all of it in May. It's pretty exciting, but, you know, I'm trying my best not to think about it.
A Pulitzer. That's incredible. Yeah. Now, did you do all the writing of the book then?
Or? Yeah, sure.
Okay. I didn't know if you had some other ghostwriter or something.
No,
or
no. I am a writer. I said to Max Maven, I may actually be the first writer in history to ever write a magic book.
all by yourself.
Yeah.
Without the aid of everyone else.
Indeed.
Well, congratulations on that. So tell me some more about Magic Inc. I want to talk, since we're over here in the shop around here, one of the last remaining brick-and-mortar shops in this internet age. And I remember you know, many years coming in and talking with your dad about the place and the little catacombs he had of all the places. I guess those still exist.
Oh, and of course.
Got that, all little things stashed around, and he showed me his index card file. Did you still handle that? Or
well, you know, we tend to have everything on computer now.
Now
it's
you do.
It's
okay.
A different age.
But, finally got up there. Okay.
And the Magic Shop is, you know, back in business. Everybody had written our obituary after my dad died, but we brought it back, and it's thriving. The irony that it had lost money for so many years in boom times, and now we're actually making money and it's a recession is just vaguely amusing to me, but we're doing well, and we're manufacturing new tricks again. Dan Harlan has a relationship with the shop. He's putting out all of his new tricks through Magic Inc. We're manufacturing right here on the premises. Everything is American-made, and we're very proud of that.
Well, I remember that Francis used to publish books. You had your own printing press or something back here,
yeah,
I remember.
Sure.
And so, do you still have that, or do you still print?
We still have the printing press, and we still do publish books, but we tend to do it...
You outsource that.
I mean, we had Beating a Dead Horse is actually published by Junto Publishing.
Okay.
But
are they in Chicago or
no? They're in New York, but
okay.
And London. But it's for instance, the Marlowe trilogy. We
yes.
have two of those books out, and we're printing I think the third next year. And John Rockerbomber is editing that, and that'll be the third in the series. Of course, Revolutionary Card Technique was the first, and then Cardially Yours, and the next one is going to be called something along the lines of Marlowe Light or whatever, but we don't really have a proper title yet.
And Don Weiberg, you had a question over here?
The catacombs, you're within proximity of the original carpenter who came up here as a young shop teacher.
I remember the blood.
Yes. What happened? Oh, their saw is whizzing away, and boop, there goes the finger. Oh, let's see. Nope, there goes another one.
On the other hand.
It wasn't
but on the other hand.
Yeah, but there was blood.
Yeah, I think I mentioned in the book.
It's in the book. Yes,
yeah,
thank you.
You weren't doing close-up any time that week. bandaged hands.
Ten fingers are all grew back. Yeah, they grew back. Like a chameleon's tail. Now, how many items would you say that you have in the shop in San
Diego? Oh, we have about 7,000, I think.
Wow. Okay. Now, most of this online. I guess you can also order online.
We have online business. Again, this is thriving. We did 150%, you know, this past month from the month last year, and so we keep growing both in mail order and online. And
I'm curious, with a brick-and-mortar shop and also an internet shop, what would you say would be your percentage? Do you have an idea?
You know,
50-50?
We don't, because we don't measure it against each
thing. That's what I wondered.
Thing. We measure it against what that specific thing did the year before.
Whether you're growing or staying the same or whatever.
Right. Okay. And we've been growing in both areas, and that's very encouraging.
Right.
Now, I don't know if you know, but... all of the Harry Potter books have the magic shops at a place called Diagon Alley.
Yes.
And there's a diagonal alley out in back of the shop, and it's called Diagon Alley. And I don't know if J.K. Rowling, you know, did that because she saw this or it was just a coincidence.
Yeah, serendipitous.
But we are, in fact, the only magic shop in the world actually on Diagon Alley. So that's kind of cool.
That is amazing. Now, as I recall, too, that there was like a carriage house or something in the back and that still has some things stored back there.
Oh, sure, yeah. We have the stables on the property back here across the alleyway. And the etymology of that property is really interesting. The Chicago Police Department used to house their mounted division in the stables out there. I'm talking 100 years ago now. And they basically, you know, had the policemen come in, ride their horses, and store them back in the stables.
Right.
And in the 20s, the Chicago Police Department sold the property. Now, this sounds like a gag, but it's absolutely true. You can look it up online.
Right.
The Chicago Police Department sold the property to Al Capone. He then put up 7-foot walls mortar walls around that part of the property and opened a speakeasy promptly.
Back over there. Old
back
Maze.
In the 20s, yeah, okay. During Prohibition.
How long did that operate? I guess during Prohibition, then after Prohibition, they started started selling it, it closed down.
The Volstead Act in 1932, I guess, put them out of business. But
wow. Interesting. So you have no plans ever to move from this property because they're so entrenched. I mean, this is Magic Inc. and has been here since when? When was the founding of Magic Inc.? Or?
We were originally the Island Magic Company, and we go back to 1926. And we're the oldest continuously family-run magic shop in North America. Hmm. It's, you know, it's complete line from Laurie Ireland to Francis Ireland, who married my dad, and became Francis Ireland Marshall, and now my wife Susan and I run the shop, and we're back in business despite all of the naysayers that thought we were dead and gone 5 years ago.
So it changed from the Ireland Magic Company to Magic Inc.?
Yes, they incorporated in 1962, I guess, and we moved here to this shop in 1963, mm-hmm. and we've been here in this location ever since. Although we did run contiguously with a shop in the Loop for a couple of years. We were at 109 North Dearborn for many years, and both shops operated because my dad and Francis were worried that, will magicians come this far north to the magic shop? Well, they sure did, and they closed the shop in the Loop.
Right. Well,
you might mention something about the cabinetry here, which has a history as well.
That's right.
Tell me something about that.
The cabinetry is from the National Magic Company in the Loop, and when they went belly up, it timed out so that we were just about to move here. Not quite. We had to buy the. I guess there were about 30 different cases, and these represent the best of what there was. But we had to store them for a few months before we actually moved into this location. And all of this wonderful cabinetry came from the National Magic Company.
Well, let me come back full circle, going back to the book there again.
Yeah,
I know you have a lot of favorite stories or something.
To the book.
I was going to say, you've got certainly in your lecture a couple of stories you must tell. Give me a couple of your favorite stories from the book.
Well, I guess one of my favorite stories is early on. My dad, when I was a teenager, was very stern with me and very strict. And he took me aside and said, "Son, never go to a strip joint because you'll see something there you shouldn't ought to see." And when I finally got old enough to rebel and I went to a strip joint, I realized my father was absolutely right. I saw something I shouldn't see. My father.
What are you doing here, son?
Yeah.
Well, told you not to come here.
Okito and my dad used to go to regularly to sort of strip joints. I guess to see, according to them, the comics.
Oh, of course, the burlesque comics. Yes,
the old comic. That old trick. Yeah, Dad, that's why I went too.
I came to the comedians. And any others come to mind?
Well, there are so many stories that are packed in there. The Army days, I guess, are one of my favorite chapters in there. I call the chapter J. Marshall versus the U.S. Army. And he, of course, developed the mop routine. And the soldiers, his fellow dog soldiers, just loved him. But sergeants and lieutenants were driven crazy by him, and he was literally transferred more than any other soldier in history. He literally went all over the country because he was like a hot potato, and they didn't know how to deal with him.
Yeah.
One of the things, the mop routine was certainly a classic routine, and Douglas MacArthur watched him do that. He was one of the first soldiers over in Japan when we won the war. He was there, I guess, the first or second week of September, literally. And he told me a story once where he was being transferred from one fort to another, and he found that he didn't have to get in this tank and take this five-hour bumpy trip in a tank. As long as he was at the fort on time, the Army was okay with it. So he decided to take a train.
Okay.
He just checked the schedule and got to the fort on time. But all of a sudden he realized He was the only Caucasian face on this train.
Okay.
It was just 2 weeks after the war had ended.
Yeah.
And there's a Caucasian American soldier with a rifle over his arm. And he was reading a book when he realized every single Japanese person in the train was looking at him. And he said he continued to read the book for the next 5 hours, but he's not sure he ever turned the page.
Another facet of Jay that I don't think a lot of magicians knew, and that was his bagpipe playing and the bagpipe routine, which I remember seeing as a small boy at the Chicago Theater. Would you care to embellish that a little bit?
Well, my dad and I, of course, we're of Scottish descent, and we both, in fact, play the bagpipes. I learned independently in New York when I was in my 30s, but my dad learned the bagpipes for a very specific reason. He was in a show on Broadway called Love Life with Ray Middleton and Nanette Fabre. And there's a great story there, too. Nanette Fabre, he sawed her in half at every performance.
She was a beautiful woman, I remember.
She was. She's still around.
Yeah.
93, I think. But she asked Jay, how do you do that trick? And he said, well, I was thinking of using a different woman each night, but that's the coward's way out. There was a writer who, in Liberty Magazine, had an article that said Jay had cut a piece of Nanette Fabre's posterior while doing the Sawing a Lady in Half act. And my dad went into Nanette Fabre's dressing room when the article came out, threw the magazine down on the ground and feigned outrage and said, you know this never happened. You know, I was thinking of suing this bastard, and then I realized it's probably not such a bad thing to have in print that I got a piece of ass from Nanette Fabre.
So, I can hear that.
Yes.
I can just hear it.
That's not in the book.
It is in the book.
Oh, is it? Okay. Oh,
sure it is.
Yeah. It's in a book?
It's all in the book.
That's the bagpipes.
Yes. Well, back to the bagpipes. He actually learned the bagpipes because after he finished this show, Love Life, there was another show, which was then called What a Day, but eventually became Great to Be Alive. And the producers said, oh, Jay, you know, you'd be wonderful in this role. You'd be just perfect, except, unfortunately, you'd have to play the bagpipes. And my father's response was, play the bagpipes? I teach the bagpipes. And they said, really? Well, give us your agent's information. Jay gave him the information, and they booked him a few weeks later. In the meantime, my father went out and got a set of bagpipes at a pawn shop the next day and learned to play them. And he was the one that referred to me as a tenacious little bastard. It's in the genes.
He only played two songs on the bagpipes. And what was the line about that?
Well, he played more than that, but he played Bonnie Dundee was the one he was pretty good at, sure. And that's what he
I always remember the line. He said, I play two in the routine.
Yeah.
There are two songs that I play in a bagpipe. One is
Road to the Isles,
and the other one isn't.
And Bonnie Dundee.
Oh, okay.
I know I play one of them, I'm just not sure which one it is. That was the line. Yeah.
Wonderful.
But he was quite a piper, and he remained a piper in the union, the Musicians Union 802 in New York, until the day he died. He was really the first piper in 802, and now there are a bunch, I guess, because of the parades they have. But he was.
Can you tell me a story? And I'm sure you've been asked it to every lecture that you've been around the world, and it has to do with how he developed Lefty.
Well, there was a book by a man named Douglas Craggs, who was an Englishman, who wrote The ABCs of Ventriloquism. And Jay had a vent figure named Henry that he traveled around with and went to college with and basically worked with for about 8 years. And the same guy that made Charlie McCarthy for Edgar Bergen made Henry for Jay. It was a good vent figure. His name's in the book, but I don't recall his name offhand. It's the concussion. It really is. But when he went into the army, Henry became too heavy to carry with all of Jay's other equipment. And he was reading on one of the troop trains as he was transferred from base to base. He was reading the ABCs of ventriloquism, and he thought, a glove puppet, that would be an interesting way. So Lefty became a khaki army glove at first, because of the war. And
khakis, he had dress gloves, I guess.
He had a khaki army glove, and he put buttons on it and colored in, you know, the lips and,
right,
around his thumb and his index finger. Mm-hmm. And that was the first Lefty. When the war was over, he then changed it to a white glove. But it wasn't until a friend of his, who was a roller skating comedian juggler, said, Jay, you know, magicians pull rabbits out of the hat. You should use the other glove and put ears on the glove and make it a rabbit. And Jay thought, that's
perfect,
a great idea.
Yeah.
And that's when Lefty became a rabbit. That was about 1946 or 7, I guess. And
it hadn't changed since then.
Well,
roughly,
you know,
it was pretty much the same.
He did the same act for 61 years with Lefty, and that is why he insisted I call the book Beating a Dead Horse.
Uh-huh.
So, and I added the subtitle, The Life and Times of Jay Marshall.
Now, you say insisted in that. So he had something to do with this before his death?
Well, when I told him I wanted to write a book, you know, he initially tried to talk me out of it, but he then said, listen, just promise me you'll write it when I croak.
Okay.
Because he wanted the story told, and he wanted the truth told, but he didn't
want... The unvarnished truth of warts and all. Yeah.
Yes, but he didn't want to be around to face the music for any of it.
Okay.
Because he was a bit of a scoundrel.
And a rounder.
with the ladies, and it's all in there. It's all... covered pretty thoroughly.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much, Sandy. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time, and I'm looking forward to a read of the book then also.
All right.
And be seeing you around, I guess, during its next year.
I've got one other story from the Army years.
Okay.
That, if I can remember this right. He used to have to sign what was called the reprimand book. And you know, when you did something wrong, you had to go and sign the reprimand book. And he told me once that, very proudly, he said, one whole page of the reprimand book was just his signature. He was at one of these briefings, you know, where the soldiers sit around and the sergeants, you know, give you all this long-winded thing. And the sergeant said to him, Marshal, is that man next to you sleeping? My father turned and said, yes, he is. The sergeant said, well, wake him up. My father said, you wake him up. You put him to sleep.
Sign that reprimand
Marshall,
book.
Marshall, go sign the reprimand book. And when you're done, come back and water all of the shrubbery around the barracks. So he went and did that. He signed the reprimand book. When he came back, it was pouring rain. So he got out the hose, and to the amusement of all of the other soldiers watching him from inside the barracks, he was watering the shrubbery, looking like a drowned rat, and they started laughing hysterically, which brought the sergeant out, and the sergeant looked at him and said, Marshal, you're a wise ass. Go sign the reprimand book again. Anyway, that'll cap off the story, I guess.
Another great true classic over there. Well, great. Again, thank you very much. And I appreciate the fact that this is going to be coming out, and you're nominated for a Pulitzer. Congratulations
thank
again.
You. And
it sounds
three,
fantastic.
Three Benjamin Franklin Awards as well, in three different categories.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. And so here we are at Magic Inc. And until next time, this is Scotty out. All right, one last time. This is Scott Wells with MagicNewsWire.com, just kind of doing a quick wrap after we have done an Upper Midwest Magical Mystery Tour, and it's been a lot of fun seeing a lot of magic along the way from Chicago on up into northeastern Michigan, and I hope you've enjoyed being along with me and seeing and hearing some of the sights and sounds through your ears on this podcast. One of the things I did forget to mention, and I wish I would have had my iTouch with me here so I could have recorded this, it was kind of fun. It was a place called Albany's in Hobart, Indiana. As we were returning back from Michigan and drove through Indiana, I was trying
stop by a chocolate factory. Yes, not just a regular chocolate factory. This was the coolest. It looked like Willy Wonka's, and everything you could sample. You could stay there all day and just eat chocolate. I mean, they had this huge tube of chocolate that was kind of coming down from the ceiling. It looked like, I don't know, like a 10-gallon bucket or something, you know, with it was three stories high with just chocolate that was pouring over the outside of this thing and then going down. And then you can, you know, walk up and watch the chocolate being made and wrapped and boxed and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, in sampling all of the different kinds of chocolate-covered, oh, gosh, like Grand Marnier chocolate-covered pecans and chocolate-covered Oreos. And they had gummy bears and gummy worms and all kinds of jelly things then as well. And just look at the stuff. And I say, you want to sample something? Anything you want. It was fantastic. Well, of course, we loaded up with several pounds of chocolate, which will equate to some sort of exponential number once it hits the stomach and the thighs. That's what my wife would say. So anyhow, wish you guys could have joined us along that, but I thought I might mention that also. It was Albanese, Albanese, I think it is, Albanese, in Hobart, Indiana. Awesome place. If you like chocolate, it's to die for, as they say, in more ways than one. Well, again, I've had just a great time up here in the upper Midwest, and I hope you guys enjoyed it too. And so for now, hope you had a great time. This is Scotty out.